There's a lot of very specific Stuart language solutions in the world.
Yes. I in general, do not recommend that other people use computers the way that I use computers.
Hey everyone, and welcome to Season 3, Episode 46 of Bad Voltage. I hope you're all doing very, very well. I'm here with, of course, my compadre, Mr. Stuart Ian Langridge. How are you doing, Mr. Aquarius? Doing all right?
Yo, not too bad. You know how it is.
Yeah, I do know how it is, and it's not too bad. Our friend and compadre, Jeremy Beyonce Garcia, is sadly not here today. Is at a world-renowned event called KubeCon, where thousands of people from all over the world have dug out their passports that they haven't looked at in many, many years. They've checked the expiry dates to make sure that they're actually valid. And then they've gotten an aeroplane and gone there. And, you know, probably right now as we record this, they're actually at a party having a great time.
This is so unkind of you.
Unfortunately, one person wasn't able to read his passport, and we're lucky because he's on the show. So, George Castro, how are you doing?
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Remember, check your expiration dates, or you too might end up being a substitute podcast host while Jeremy's on the beach.
I do have a question for you. So, When did you realize? Like, when did you notice that it was, and walk us through that moment, because I can only imagine how your stomach sank.
Like, you know how you have your passport and you look at it all the time, but you're traveling, right? And then I had put it away and I was like, oh, I think I'm good until like 2023 or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I hadn't, it was like in a box, and I went in there and I was like, no, off by one error. And if I would have caught it 2 weeks before, I could have expedited it. But it was like a week before, and I'm calling agencies. Ooh. And
you couldn't do it. Like, I thought you could go to some place and, you know, you pay like $500 and the government will expedite it in 24 hours or something like that.
Yeah, pre-COVID, that's not a problem. But now that, you know, everyone just stopped wearing masks and everyone's traveling and stuff, the guy's like, well, if you get to El Paso, Texas, we can get you one in 3 weeks expedited. I was like, dude, that's
not going to work.
No, it's the same thing. It's the same thing here. Friend of mine needs to renew their passport for exactly the same reason. For exactly the same thing. Didn't realize it was coming up on the date. And it's stupidly queued up. Before COVID, you do the expedited thing. Now they're like, he sent the stuff in and he hasn't even heard back that it's in the queue yet. And it's a couple of weeks in. I'm assuming this conference is outside the US, is it?
Yeah, it's in Valencia, Spain. It's beautiful. Yeah, it's like on the beach. The Twitter stream of pictures looks amazing. Yeah. And it wasn't expired. Remember, there's a window depending on each country, right? So it expires within a 6 month window.
Oh,
right.
Okay.
Then you can't go, right? It's not just your expiration date. It depends on where you're going. And, you know, they always say when it's the last year, you know, that's when you should start filing your stuff. So
I tell you what, man, you're a stronger man than I am, because if I couldn't be there, as far as I will be aware, as far as I will be concerned, that event will be dead to me. I would not be looking at any of it on Twitter.
I know.
Like raging FOMO.
I know. I just miss my friends, though. You know, I'm glad they're all having a good time. You see new people getting into projects and stuff, and it's cool. It's cool.
I am 95% sure I'll have to check in the draw, but I think it's exactly 3 years to the day from today that my passport expires, 2025. Yeah. So I'm okay.
You should probably set that Google Calendar, set that reminder like five times.
I have, you know, you have to, you probably don't know, when you travel into the US, you have to get a thing called an ESTA. ESTA, right. I don't quite understand it. And you have to get a new one every 2 years. And last time I went to the US, I realized mine had run out while I was stood in the queue to check in a bag in the airport. So I stood there on my phone and renewed it as I inched closer to the check-in desk thinking, and I thought, if I get there and they go, it's not done, I'll be like, no, but it's done. Here's the receipt. Look, they'll say, yeah, but it's only done 3 seconds ago. It doesn't show up on the system for 2 days or something.
Oh, dude, that sounds like an M. Night Shyamalan movie.
It was a weird moment. I'm there going, for God's sake, don't cut out on me now. Come on. Yeah. And it was all fun. So that was lovely.
And to be fair, you know, like to Axe point, I'm busting your chops about your passport, but I think all of us,
when's
like
yours the only time out, you really,
yeah, the only time you really look at it, like is that when you're double checking that your passport's in your bag. Like this is what happens with me. Like the day that I'm flying, I'll check. Oh, thank God. Yeah.
Cause I was more worried about the COVID stuff. I was like, here's my vaccine card. I've got it, you know, in triplicate, you know, I've got my tests in my thing. And then just getting back up to speed and to travel. I don't know how many of you have gone back on the road, but you know, stuff is in the is in the wrong pocket now and you're not as efficient. And like, I feel like I used to just be able to turn around and, you know, now I'm just like relearning all sorts of stuff.
Gone back on the road. I haven't left the flat for 2 years.
Exactly. Like my laptop bag has dust on it. Like it has dust on it.
The worst thing is you go to your laptop bag, you're like, oh, here's that half packet of mints that I left in here. Right, okay.
It is weird though, because it's traveling is a muscle that's atrophied in the last 3 years, and we've forgotten how to do it.
Yeah,
I went to England, and I didn't have a travel adapter. I would never have made that mistake.
Wow.
Previously,
the last time I travelled anywhere was to see you lot at Scale.
Right.
When we were coming back from Scale, I was slightly worried that they were going to close things off. They were over that weekend, they were talking about maybe we're going to start a lockdown in the UK. And I'm like, what if I have to live in Los Angeles now? I don't want to. I've got a family.
That was actually when we were doing Bad Voltage Live at Scale. Yeah. And that was pretty much the week. The day he landed in the US, because we hung out the week building up to Scale. Was pretty much when it kicked off in California. I mean, obviously, COVID hit in different parts of the US. And we were genuinely considering not going because I was already sick from a previous cold. That's right. You canceled.
Oh, yeah, I was so sad, but I had to. Yeah, because I'm diabetic. So
that's right.
I was like,
And no one knew anything back then about this.
Yeah,
this disease, right? Yeah. So remember, we're all washing our groceries. Wiping them down.
Scale's going to be really important for me now. I'm looking forward to going. And KubeCon North America is in Detroit. So eventually they all just come here. So I'm like, hey.
Dude, you've been lobbying for conferences in Detroit as long as I've known you.
Finally. Finally. I'm volunteering to help with the social stuff and stuff. So hopefully y'all will, if you come, you'll enjoy some of the great local stuff that we have.
When is KubeCon in Detroit? It's in October, is it?
October. Like
I might come out for that.
Yeah. CFPs are open now, I think, because you know that cloud native train it's always moving. So
keeps going. Whew. Keeps going.
A lot of work.
All right. Well, it's, you know what? KubeCon's loss is our benefit. It's great to have you, George. Thanks
for having me.
Like, literally pinged George, I think it was yesterday. It was like, fancy coming on Bad Voltage. You just said, send me an invite.
Yeah, that was it. I get two positive things that Jonah only ever messages for two things: new music to listen to.
Yeah.
Or to guest star. So, you know.
That's right.
I get that little notification. It's like, all right.
And when did Ghost Lost put an album out? I mean, it's been ages.
I did. I worked out for it this morning. Thought about you.
It's good, but it's not that good.
A joke specifically for Dave Meggins Nichols.
Right. So we should talk about some news. There's lots going on. And George, given the fact that you are the guest of honor, do you want to kick us off with something?
Yeah. So this first one's from the GitHub blog, dated May 4th. GitHub will start requiring two-factor auth for contributors, which I think is amazing. There's certain open source projects like the Kubernetes. In order to contribute, you have to have two-factor auth on. And I have noticed, you know, when I check other open source projects or people talk about it, it's not as popular as you think it is. So I'm glad they're just enforcing it. I think it's a good idea.
So the reason I put this in general, two-factor auth is a good thing. No worries. And it is, as you say, it's on for certain big projects, really, like NPM things. You have to have it on.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they're going to basically, anyone who does anything which is some kind of editing thing, it's going to require two-factor. So approving pull requests, making commits, using GitHub Actions, all that stuff. I don't know if you will need two-factor auth in order to file issues, and I assume you will not, but you might need to in order to close issues or something. I'm not sure of the exact detail. But I like two-factor auth in, like, concept. Mm. But as more and more places bring it in, it worries me a bit because a lot of them, they want, something like TOTP, the Google Authenticate or something like that.
Yeah.
But that's such a massive pain to move from phone to phone. And I'm kind of worried. Every time I'm asked for two-factor auth, I'm like, yep, no problem. Send me an email. Mm-hmm. Happy with that. No problem at all. But increasingly people are like, well, we don't want to send you emails. We want to use like a magic app on your phone. And I'm like,
yeah.
First time I drop my phone in the bath or I leave it in the pub and then I can't sign into anything. And it's not like that never happens. And moving from phone to phone, if you're actually using the Google Authenticator, I mean, so it's all just TOTP or HOTP, I forget which one.
Top of the pubs.
Yeah.
That's what I thought it stood for.
What does it stand for? OT is one time. Pubs. Shut up.
I don't know.
One of the T's is a token, I think. I think token something.
I think TOTP is time, so because it's time-based, and the other one is how many you've done based or whatever. But anyway, so Google Authenticator is just an implementation of that. It's not some kind of secret proprietary Google thing. But you can export stuff from Google Authenticator into another Google Authenticator, both on Android, as I understand it. And as far as I'm aware, everyone else just hasn't dealt with this problem at all. And it's kind of worrying me.
I put everything in 1Password and it's amazing.
But 1Password is not 2-factor. It's 1-factor.
Yeah.
If someone says we want to do a 2-factor auth, you can't go, okay, I want 1Password to be my 2-factor. They're like, no, because that's already where your 1-factor is, the password.
Yeah. It's funny you say that, Ak, because I have the same issues with 2-factor authentication, and GitHub is actually a good example of this. Is, originally when I set up 2FA on GitHub, it was like with a YubiKey or something like that, which I will never use again because I never have the damn YubiKey with me.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I never have it with me. My phone is literally always by my side. I don't go anywhere without it.
Yeah.
But to your point, like you change phones and then you got to reset everything up again.
Yeah.
And, what I 9 times out of 10 end up doing is just having it send me a text with the code.
Yeah. So I'm either send me an email or send me a text. People are like, oh, stop using SMS, man. It's so unsecure. Why can't you use it secure? And I'm like, just shut up because I know I'll get SMSs. I don't know about any of your other stupid technology. I don't have to migrate it from phone to phone. SMSs don't just works. An email just works. Stop trying to break it and make me use some stupid thing you've made up, which 5 years from now, you'll be bored with and I'll be locked into.
Yeah. When 3-factor authentication comes along.
I think it's interesting because if people are like, if you look at GitHub's target audience, right? You have like your hobbyists and then you have like your professional developers or whatever, right? Like my job is in GitHub, right? So like, obviously I'm expected to keep that stuff, tight, but I can see someone saying, oh, I just want to push my stupid Raspberry Pi scripts, onto the internet. Why do I have to, do all this? Or maybe you have hobbyists doing, that kind of stuff. But
in my mind, it makes sense for GitHub because technical people can, much as to Ak's point, it's annoying. They can figure it out.
It's hard.
It's universally confusing to a lot of consumers.
Yes.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah.
There are two other ones I have to use for Okta for signing into one of the companies I work with.
Yep.
And you have to install their app for that. And so I had to install that when I got the new phone. I had to install the app on that and then sign up again. And that was
And they only supported Okta. You couldn't use another app?
No. Got to use Okta. Now, the Okta implementation of 2FA is quite nice. It just sends a push message and then it pops up on your phone. And the other one is signing into Google is 2-factor. But that's because on every device I own, it pops up a thing going, are you trying to sign into Google? And that's fine. But as far as I'm aware, you can only do that sort of thing if you are Google. It doesn't work if you're trying to sign into some random thing because you're not going to have an app on their phone. You're not going to be able to just pop up notifications on every device.
I just shove everything in 1Password. It supports my Google. It supports my – I've had it support Okta before. But, a lot of this stuff is like what your organization configures, right?
Exactly.
How do you do that cross-device when you get new phones? Or have you got it all stored in the cloud?
I get new phones. I install 1Password on it. I do my thing and kablammo. It's just there.
Oh, because it's all stored in the cloud?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. Are you paying for it?
Oh, yeah, I pay.
Oh, right, okay.
Easily is worth it. Right, it's like $12.99 for a family plan. I put I put my GitHub recovery code, you know, those printouts of the stuff. Like I used to hang them on
everything
on
goes board. In that. Yep.
Yep. I put, my COVID certificates. I put my vaccination card. Like I put all, I just have found, and I know the Linux
do you
guy.
Do you use the password manager?
Yeah. He's pass.
What's that?
Bog standard, Unix password manager. And then
it actually, like CLI.
It actually stores the stuff in Git and then it syncs with my phone.
Oh, okay. Oh,
interesting.
I see.
Yeah.
So I've got stuff, and it's GPG encrypted. So,
right.
So they're not stored in the cloud, but they are stored on my machine and then gitted around.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. No, that makes sense. Yeah.
This is not something that I would remotely recommend to someone who wasn't me, but I'm perfectly happy with it.
Yeah.
Well, you are the man who edits videos with freaking command line tools. So, yeah, there's a lot of very specific Stuart language solutions in the world.
Yes, I in general do not recommend that other people use computers the way that I use computers.
Yeah, because other than people that work on distros, I don't know anybody that maintains a GPG key anymore. Other than like distro uploaders. Yeah,
I have one for this, and that's what I use it for.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah.
And I don't have to worry about someone buying the company and then deciding to shut them down a year from now. So.
Sure, sure.
Man, remember key parties?
Yeah. Jeez. We've gone to them together.
Yeah. Yeah. Crazy. Yeah. Cool. Well, good stuff. So should we I actually have another security related one.
Go for it.
But before we do that, we just wanted to share with everybody that Marius Quabeck from Nerd Zoom Media, who does a great job editing this show, he is the reason why this show sounds good. And he deals with the fact that our audio has been broken in one form or another in every single episode this year. So thank you, Marius, for polishing that particular turd. And it's been all three of us have screwed up here.
Yeah, we are sorry.
But he's going to be editing this show live on Twitch.
Now, hang on, which, genius. You're mentioning in the show that he's editing it live on Twitch.
Yeah, that way you can listen to the final product
and you're totally right. I didn't even think
bouncer.
About that.
Yeah.
By definition, Anyone who's hearing you saying this has missed the Twitch broadcast. However,
all right, hang on. No. I can turn this around. All right,
so be a singularity here. Any minute.
All right. All right, Twitch people. I hope you're enjoying the stream. Marius, he seems like a nice guy, but he's a bit weird looking. His eyes are too close together. But other than that, he's a nice guy. I'm just kidding. I have no idea how close his eyes are together. But Stuart is a bit of a dick. How many of you on this Twitch stream would agree that Stuart's a bit of a dick?
Add it on live. Just add a little wiener.
I'm hoping that the answer is not that many of you, because I really respect the fact that Marius is doing this on Twitch, whereas Jono was sneering about Twitch and he thinks you all sell drugs to kids. So
I was not sneering. I did not say that you sell drugs to kids. Yeah.
Do you not watch Twitch? Do you have an aversion to watching on Twitch?
I'm very annoyed with Twitch right now. Very annoyed. Because I did a good deed and they punished me for it, right? There's a drummer called 66 Samus. Or Samus66, who is hilarious. He's a YouTuber. And he does these like drumming streams. And I joined one of his streams and I was having a great time. I was actually sick with COVID, laid in bed. And you can do this thing. I don't really use Twitch very much, but you can do this thing where you can buy people like a subscription to his channel or something like
that. Yeah. Gift a sub.
And you can gift a sub.
Yeah.
And
I've heard of that. Yeah, I don't know much about Twitch either. I've heard of that. There are things called bits, but I don't know if they're the same or different.
So I didn't have a Twitch account. Someone had taken Jono Bacon, which almost never happens, right? And it might have been me 10 years ago. So I registered a different Twitch account.
What was it called? Was it VM Linus in square brackets?
No. It was Axemaniac.
Axemaniac.
And interacting with the he has a great show. So I gifted 20 subs. It was like,
oh man,
$80 or something like that.
Yeah.
Just because I thought, like, I don't do this. Clearly that guy works his ass off.
Yeah, for sure.
And all the rest of it. So I gifted 80 subs, typed in the credit card details, and then a couple of days later, my account got banned for fraud.
Oh man, all the automation around banning people is just so awful these days.
Like, so well, it said you can click on this thing to appeal it. I went and wrote down, like, at least in my definition, I wasn't quite this snarky, but it was like basically said, from my definition of fraud, it's usually not giving money to other people.
Yeah.
It's usually taking money from people is how it works. Explained it all and put all my details in there and all the rest of it. And, you know, never got a response from Twitch.
Yeah.
So I'm quite annoyed with Twitch. And poor 66 Samus, I emailed him and I was like, I'm sorry, man, but like I gifted those subs, but they
yeah.
And I'm hoping they didn't remove those subs from the people. Yeah. Anyway,
we might do a topic on this in the future or something. The automated auto ban, like defaults to just smoking people, you know?
Yeah.
Like I follow a lot of Destiny content creators, and when the big expansion came out, the YouTube algorithm just started to ban a bunch of their content and remove it, you know? Oh, and yeah, that's like their livelihood, you know? And then,
yeah,
you know, the Bungie had to get involved to help them get them sorted out. I'm just like, man, like it. You know how there's that part of you that you're like, oh man, I could be a YouTuber and stuff, you know? And it's like, what a fragile way to lose your job.
Yeah. There's quite a lot of, yeah, like you say, algorithmic dropping people off. And it's not even that the algorithm cuts you off for whatever reason. It's that there's no way to appeal because both Google, YouTube and Twitch, which is Amazon under the covers, are not interested in letting you talk to a person to resolve your problem. It's all fill this form in and then we'll ignore you. I mean,
they're like, watched your ad. We don't care. See
ya. Yeah. I've had videos, content ID attacked by someone by record companies. And like the thing you're claiming is there isn't there. It's not that I'm using your music, but I think it's okay. Or I'm going, no, it's just fair use. You're saying your music is in here. Your music is not in here. I know the music's in here and it's not that. But there's no way of saying your accusation is incorrect. You're only allowed to say, I am contesting your accusation because I think I'm allowed to use your music. The idea that they're accusing you of using music that isn't in there is completely wrong. So Dan Bull's right about this only like 2 days ago. And yeah, he's a professional YouTuber. Well, he's not. He's a professional rapper. But he makes an obvious income from YouTube.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's terrible, and I think one of the worst here is Twitter. I mean, I know somebody who, I'm obviously not going to say who it was, who was repeatedly getting harassed from a single account. And this was not like plain text. Like this harasser was copying in this individual's name.
Mm-hmm.
And they reported them multiple times. Nothing happened.
Yeah.
And we hear this all the time with it. But I actually think that's a good point, George. There's a whole show on that.
You
should do that in the future when Jeremy's back and you should come on it.
I do want to mention one cool thing before we go way too down the rabbit hole. So I'm watching a YouTube video or whatever, and I search for something I needed help. Like, you know how YouTube's really great for you? Like, oh man, my washing machine's busted, and you stick the model number in YouTube and you get like an instructional video or whatever. So I'm watching how to clean the filter or whatever. And there's a little dollar sign in the UI on my TV in my Chromecast. And I was like, interesting. So I click on it and it's like, you can tip this person like $2 or you can like choose or whatever. And I was like, you know what? You just saved me like an entire afternoon of busting my ass, you know, sure. So I click it and then it goes, open your YouTube app. It opens on my phone. It's connected to my Google Pay. I sent him $2 and that was it. It was just smooth.
That's great.
Yeah, I was like, does not every YouTube video have this? Because like, you know, I do want to like take care of people when they're, you know.
You have to be, I don't know the details, but you have to have a certain amount of subscribers and so on before you're allowed to monetize stuff.
Amazing. If you know, I would rather do that than like, you know, buying people subs and made up currencies. You know,
That's great. That's a really slick interface. I like that.
Just let me pay.
That's like a good idea.
And like you say, because it's like what I love about that as well is it's at the point of like you've just had the value, right?
Yeah.
It's at the point where you think, if somebody does something nice for you and then the little button pops up and it says, would you like to tip them?
Yeah.
Of course.
That was great. You know. Here's a Viver. Yeah.
And for your social community muscles, Bacon, it let me post a comment and it defaults to like, thanks so much for the content or whatever. And it puts a little badge that says you donated to the thing and it puts it at the top of the YouTube comments.
That's it. I have seen that. I've seen that. I've seen the button on videos, but I've never used it. So I've seen on live streams on YouTube, you can do chats and super chats. Yeah. And a super chat is where you pay for it, and then it highlights the thing you said in the chat in big writing, and it sticks it up at the top so the people doing the stream can see that and review it and say thank you or whatever. And I've seen the, because the donate to this video button is pretty new, I think, the last month or it two,
is.
Maybe.
It is. I was like, oh, is it a new feature? But it doesn't show up on all of it. I think that's the only time I've seen it. So now I'm like trying to pay attention.
I've seen it on the web version, but only relative. It might be 6 months or something, but I don't think it's been around a super long time.
Yeah. Cool. Good stuff. Well, okay. Do you want to hear some more good news? Yeah.
Let's do it.
Did you hear about this White House open source security thing that's going on? So the Linux Foundation and the OpenSSF Foundation met with at the White House. This has been going on recently. And they met, I think it was on Thursday last week, something like that. They met with a ton of people from Amazon, Google, Microsoft, all of these companies to basically discuss security in open source specifically. You know, obviously, open source is driving so much infrastructure in the world. And these companies have basically pledged $30 million to boost open source security. I think it's really great that this is happening. Amazon, Ericsson, Google, Intel, Microsoft, VMware, many others. I was reading this article on TechCrunch. They're funding a 10-point plan that aims to boost the security of open source software. The plan's designed by the Linux Foundation and the OpenSSF. It's a first of its kind initiative to secure the production of open source code, improve vulnerability detection and remediation, and shorten patching response time. It will include the creation of a software bill of materials known as an SBOM. And then also this apparently it's called the Software Supply Chain Security Mobilization Plan. That will call for everyone working in the open source community, for education for people working in open source, elimination of non-memory safe programming languages like C++ and COBOL, and for annual third-party reviews for 200 of the most critical open source software components. So this was, I think, largely in response to Log4j
was the library. Log4Shell was the trademarked vulnerability name.
Yeah, I love the marketing around that.
Yeah. So pretty cool.
I mean, people have been talking about this sort of thing for ages, but the Log4j thing, I think, was the straw that broke the camel's back. Not a particularly nice metaphor, but you know what I mean? The thing which made everyone go, we really should do something about this. And people have been talking about doing this sort of thing, saying, why don't large users of open source spend money on making it better? And this is kind of what they're doing. And neatly, the Linux Foundation are doing it. I mean, sure, there might be people like, oh, I think someone else should be running it, but the Linux Foundation are reasonable stewards for this sort of thing. They know what they're talking about. They've got the money and can spend it. That seems good to me.
Yeah.
Google are creating a thing they call the Open Source Maintenance Crew as well.
That sounds like a cool job. Not gonna lie.
Is it like a rap band? Like,
that sounds like a cool job.
Yeah, well, they are, it's like the Wu-Tang. The next 36 chambers is going to be full of people fixing these. It's basically they're going to do work upstream on various projects. I mean, Google are quite good at this sort of thing anyway, I think. They've got a bit of a habit of building their own stuff instead, but they do also do a lot of work upstream, and this is going to be more of that. But yeah, this is mostly... I think the thing people have been suggesting for ages is, hey, all you huge companies making hundreds of millions of dollars,
you mean wouldn't billions even... billions with a B.
There aren't that many who are making billions. I mean, most people on that list are.
But the point
is, if you're making, billions of dollars, dropping $1 million once a year on this thing means nothing to you and probably means that, we can afford to pay someone to work on OpenSSL full time. How good would that be? So
I think if you've been around, I mean, this is something that people have been talking about a lot recently. Like if you look at, the KubeCon submission talks, everything is talking about SBOMs and supply chain security and
it is,
get to the binary on the device. There's multiple startups, making multiple tools to try to figure this out and stuff. And I think this is going to be the big open source thing that is, first you had like Linux, then you had cloud native. This part, I think, is the next big thing that will take. It'll be a multi-year effort with multiple vendors, and worse things are also going to happen, I think.
I've been saying for a while now, I think the OpenSSF could potentially be the next CNCF.
Yeah, for sure.
I think that's going to be the next center of gravity for all this stuff. And this $30 million investment. I mean, that's a pretty serious commitment. I mean, a critic could say, why isn't it more? But you could always say that.
This seems like it's $30 million more than we had yesterday. I mean, I don't yet have a very clear picture, but I think that's because it hasn't really been decided yet about how exactly they're going to do this.
Yeah.
You know, are they going to employ full-time staff to work on this, or are they going to pay people at individual projects, or are they going to go to someone like Tidelift? What? You know, it doesn't seem very clear exactly what the plan is, but there's going to be a plan, and there is funding for... Yeah, that's what I say. I don't think they're keeping it secret. I think they don't know what it is yet. They're trying to work it out.
Yeah, yeah.
Because if you ask any organization, how much money did your developers just spend fixing your stuff for LogForge, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, sure, the sophisticated ones will be like, yeah, you know, it costs us this money, but like the sheer amount, there are people who weren't even involved in tech, in open source, who I knew who were being affected by this, and they had to like work over the weekend and all this kind of stuff. Yeah. And I think at some point someone's like, well, we got to figure out, you know, however much this costs, it's got to be cheaper than what they just went through.
Yeah, you had people live patching production systems from their phone in the pub. Right? You have to avoid this kind of thing because everyone's going, we're totally bust, fix it immediately. You're like, dude, I'm in the pub, it's 12:15. And they're like, okay, hang on. How do I even type?
What are you doing? Are you a spy or some kind of special person? It's like, no, I'm patching this crappy server my coworker set up 3 years ago on a credit card.
Java server we built in 1999. Yeah.
You know, and I can't tell my boss because it's like shadow IT. I'll get in trouble.
I wonder if anyone's still running Smoothwall. There's got to be some old Smoothwall machines kind of sitting around.
Oh, like, probably.
Yeah. I don't know.
Outside Judge, we're still running it.
Yes.
If your question is, I wonder if someone's running this, ACK might be your answer.
Yeah.
That's where he keeps his GPG keys. I mean, come on.
Man. You shut up, right? You came on the show, went on and on about Flatpaks, and I have now released some apps as Flatpaks because you asked me to. So if you mean, I'll just take them away.
Did you release some apps?
Did you really?
Install it right now.
Yeah.
What did you release?
Pick and UTM. No. Pick's a color picker.
Okay.
Ali's really nice. UTM. No. When you copy links and they've got all that UTM_whatever rubbish on the end of it.
Yeah. All the tracking stuff.
It just quietly takes it away from the link. So, because I hate it when someone pastes a link, in Signal or WhatsApp or wherever you're chatting, and it's got all that stuff in there. So I tend to, if I'm pasting a link for other people, strip all that out by hand. So I just wrote an app which does it for you.
What's it called?
UTM_no.
UTM.
We should have called it No TM.
Maybe.
All about the branding.
I'm installing it now.
Pick is the other one, and Hushboard is in the process of being released. Hushboard is, if you start typing, it mutes your microphone. So people don't, it doesn't sound like a herd of wildebeest is marching across the...
What a great idea.
Yeah, it's really nice, except it doesn't work because of some kind of Flatpak isolation thing, but it's fine. We're working it out.
We'll get it.
But yeah, you know, so you ask me to do these things, I do it.
Cool. Action.
Be mean, I'll delete them. And I'll be like, George was cruel to me, so no Flatpaks for
your metrics
you.
Just went up by one on each one.
Hey.
Wicked. Hey, George, while you're here, tell us about the Stream Deck.
Steam Deck. So I got one. I've got a Stream Deck also. Because you've got Stream Deck and a Steam Deck. Yeah, I do. Yeah, so here it is.
Tell us about the Steam Deck.
I know it's like a podcast, so you can't see it, but the thing is a weekend, chonker. Yeah. And then here's my kid's Nintendo Switch.
Yeah. Oh, man, that is
anybody
big.
Who tells you that these are similar devices is totally wrong. It's not even the same.
Totally different. Yeah, yeah.
Bicycle, Mack truck.
Yeah.
So I've got it, and there's tons of reviews by now. Like if you want to see them, so I thought I'd talk about different kind of things. So one thing I was really happy about is the software did land a little hot. So after a few patches and stuff, it's generally good. You don't have to Linux to use it, which made me really happy.
No, it's just things.
Yeah, so you can hit a button and it'll switch to like KDE desktop mode. I envision I'd be in there, you know, trying to fix stuff and doing my unit. Like,
no, you play games.
You know, I should turn on SSH so if I need to debug stuff, because I've been Linux gaming for a while, right? And you have to do these things.
Yeah.
So I haven't had to do any of that. I basically just use it. It's great on the plane. The battery life is what you would expect. Not horrible, but not awesome.
What is it?
It depends, right? If you're that, which is part of the problem. So if you're running a PC game, right? If you're running like Elden Ring or something, it's not going to, you know, it'll last 2.5 hours or something like that. But
okay. So I can play 10 hours of Minesweeper on the plane. No.
Yeah. So what you do is, so it does come with like lots of toggles for you to set the TDP and things like that. So what I just do is I run it in 40 Hertz mode, which kind of controls the fan curve. And then you get a reasonable, I went from, Detroit to Seattle on 1.5 charges.
I have no idea how long that takes.
I went across the country, and it was fine. But okay, I'm always so that's carrying
5-6 hours or something.
Yeah, you can definitely do that.
Okay.
Marco had his. He does emulation, so his lasts longer. Yeah, but battery life is not going to be the strong suit on a device like this.
I have to say, dude, being all you see, you don't have to use Linux. None of this SSHing in. It's great. It's just a device. So good. So this is how I fiddled around with the fan power profiles. Right? I'm not sure that it makes any difference if you go, I'm not using the Linux, dude, but I'm still a PC gamer. Oh no,
it's still a PC, right? So like it's like a grab. Like when you're in a game, you just hit this little like button. And it's like a slider, just like your brightness.
And so you press right. a button, and then a Nintendo Switch slides out, and you use that instead.
No, so yeah. Like, yeah,
it's not one right, of those so candies you used to get on really old-fashioned CD-ROM drives.
Yeah, so there's just a slider, and you can like control the brightness and all okay. that kind of stuff. So
it does seem cool. I know a few people over here have got one, and people seem. I think pretty much everyone who's bought one knew what they were going to get, and
yeah.
And they have got that, and people seem to be generally happy with it. It doesn't seem to be impinging much on the market for the Nintendo Switch at the moment, well, as far as I can tell.
So first of all, for a few reasons, you can only buy these on Steam right now because of availability, right? And then, like, I ordered this in October of last year, and because of, you know, PC part supplies and stuff like that. Whereas I just went to Target and bought this, right? But then the Switch.
They're also like totally different audiences, right? I mean, the Switch is really designed for young kids and consumers, whereas
the Atari Lynx is Fatso edition.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think they're definitely selling every single one they make, and I think they'll sell a lot. But I think the important thing to remember is it's also a new category of device.
Yeah.
Right? So, there's already competitors making different size ones. Like, I'm sure you'll be able to buy a smaller one that looks like more Nintendo, but it's not as powerful, et cetera, et cetera. So from that kind of perspective, it's cool. For a first gen device, I think it's pretty neat. Yeah, it's pretty cool. I think, you know, all your Linux nerd friends are always like, they're just going to have one, you know? the one thing I think is a lot of people aren't talking about, which is also infuriating as both a nerd and a consumer of like consumer stuff, is when someone were to tell you, hey, I'm going to make PC gaming, but give you in a device like this, you're kind of hoping they would console-ify a lot of the things in order to make the UX better. But Valve just seems to be very PC-centric, and they consider those things strengths. So for example, on PC games, it's common you launch a game and a launcher comes up and you have to make an account for that company's thing. And then there's all this other crap and pop-ups. Whereas on a console, you hit play and you can play, right? So if someone says they're going to make a thing like this, I'm like, oh, awesome. They're going to go and they're going to have to fix all that stuff, because who would want to log into, you know, your EA account, your Electronic Arts account on the middle of a plane? But that's exactly what they did. So I'm in a plane on the Wi-Fi trying to log into my EA so I could play Madden, because they didn't fix launchers because it's just a PC. So it's like the same version. I was so mad too. Because I'm on my phone trying to copy my and it's always a strong password, right? And how am I going to copy and paste from my phone to my Steam Deck?
How do I even type a tilde on this?
Yeah, so now I'm mad. So like, I can play any game now that doesn't have a launcher. So now, you know, then I'm like, okay, fine. I just won't have any games on the device that don't have launchers. But then that's a lot of games, and it's like, well, what? You know what I mean?
This is what I was going to ask you. A couple of questions for you about this, George. One is these are PC games, but this has got a console layout.
Yeah, right? It has a console UI.
You got it's basically you got analog sticks, you got the X, B, Y, whatever buttons and everything.
Yep.
How do the controls map to a lot of these games? And then I'm assuming, because you've got little touchpads, is there you have a mouse on there for these games? Is that how you...
Yeah, for some of them. So most modern games have had controller support for a while, and generally speaking, they just work.
Right.
For older games or games that aren't console games, maybe a strategy game or something like that, this is actually a really neat feature, is they crowdsource the configs. So you can map any of these buttons to literally anything. And they got back buttons, two on each. Yep. So it's got plenty of buttons and touchpads. And what happens is people make profiles for those, and then they upload them into Steam. And then when you launch the game, you can grab community profiles and you can sort by downloads or whatever. And you can George's kick-ass config for, XCOM or whatever. And you click that, and then the overlay will tell you what the controls are. And you can play the game. Usually for older games, it's a little, it depends, which is a thing, but it works for a surprising amount of people, but my kid wouldn't be able to figure it out, which is a big difference.
And I I'm not much of a gamer, but yeah. I know with Steam, different games are available on different platforms, on Linux, Mac, Windows. What is this all Linux or?
So here's the interesting part is these are all Windows games. There are games with Linux native ports, but generally speaking, it's a rounding error. There's not that many. I mean, there's plenty, but generally speaking, Valve is pushing for people to just use Proton, which is the Wine plus the XVK thing. So these are actual Windows games, and generally speaking, it's transparent to you. So when you click install, it'll say installing DirectX and all that kind of stuff. The two problems with that are a lot of games are just have their PC port on the store. So if I install NBA 2K, it's 100 gigs on this thing because it has the 4K textures and stuff. And game developers haven't done Steam Deck options. So it's smaller to fit on there and things like that. So that's stuff that's
progress. Deck verified thing, right? That they'll probably, I think they're
doing. Yeah, so they do verify games, but there's still optimizations that game developers could be doing. In the Steam API, there's a way to say, I'm on a Steam Deck, therefore, choose these graphical options and set
these. You don't have to use the 4K textures, which means you don't have to download the 4K textures, means you don't have to have just the one game on my Steam Deck. Right, it's exactly. All I've got disk space for. How much disk space is there in it?
Well, so it comes in 64. I don't recommend that one. 256, which is this one. and then there's a 512. SD card. A mini SD card. I stuck a 1 terabyte in it and run games off of it. And I thought that would be slow and shitty, but it's actually pretty good. It's pretty...
What kind of appalling world do we live in where there are 1 terabyte SD cards?
It's pretty awesome. Yeah, you put it in, it format it and everything. If you take them out and switch, the library automatically updates and things like that. For a first generation device, you can definitely tell there's definitely flaws that are me trying to log into my Madden account or whatever, and the point I was so
the
mad.
Zaris.
But generally speaking, I think it's a good first effort, and I think it's a good. This is going to be an area I think that's just a new. How you have Linux friends, and then you had those Linux friends that started in Linux because they got Raspberry Pis, right? And then they're that whole sub community. I think you're going to get that in PC gaming, where there's going to be the mobile nerds, that are just doing all these kind of devices and things like that.
I think so. I quite like the fact that that Valve have gone, okay, we're going to build this, but it's still a thing for PC gamers. The intention is not to build a Switch rival. It's you get into this.
Yeah, I agree.
We're not a fine. I can see the issue with the launchers thing, but it's still, no, you are people who probably want to go in and fiddle with the graphical settings
and remap the
controllers and stuff like that. But this is a PC we're not going. I'm assuming, I don't actually know this, but the reason you don't get all that signed into this launcher on the consoles is not because games companies don't want it. I'm assuming that Sony provide it to you.
Yeah,
but the point is that if you are EA, you still get all that data. It's just all gatewayed through your Sony PlayStation account.
Yeah,
Not really. On the PlayStation 5, they make you sign into loads of stuff, like with NBA 2. Yeah, like with the
This is all getting NBA. So bad.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so it's not actually any better. Sign up for
Yeah, sadly. Yeah.
I was assuming that Sony would have gone, no, you can't do that, but we collect all the information.
We'll funnel it through ourselves.
Yeah.
Just we get it as well.
They're like, let's all mine the data together. We could do it way better.
Whereas Valve's whole pitch is, we're not going to do this whole kind of very complicated, you have to buy our dev kit and be approved by us in order to develop this. Because the whole point, the big thing they've got is Steam, a huge catalog of games.
And one thing I like, this is very interesting as well, is PlayStation traditionally like did portables, right? And they haven't in a long time. But they've been porting their games to PC. So I've played God of War on this. I've played Horizon Zero Dawn. It's basically like a PS4 mobile, you know, graphical power-wise. So...
Yeah,
I've been playing a lot of PS. I don't have a PlayStation, so this is my chance, you know, to play all those games, I'm having a great time. Yeah, it's fantastic.
That is literally almost as good as a Sharp's Hours, which you can sharp, Jono, because it was cracked.
that was a great device.
It was a great
device. Remember writing apps in Qt?
Yeah.
To wrap this bit up, big question is, would you buy it again, knowing what you know now?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think them delaying it was a good idea. Like if you're sad that it got delayed, you didn't miss much. Like the first, I told my, when I got it, I didn't update it right away. I wanted to see how awful it was. and it was just not awesome. Like the fan was whirring. Like sometimes you had to shut the thing off and it would like hard free and like all this kind of stuff. But once you did the update, it's fine. And they're pushing updates very regularly. Like it's almost, you know, every other week or something, you're getting some huge major feature and things like that. So I think for them, the delay was probably worth it, you know? And, you know, we'll see the streaming works amazing. Xbox did you go to xbox.com/Fortnite or whatever. So I went on there on the little Edge browser that I installed. And I was playing Fortnite. So I'm sure,
cool.
Xbox Game Pass or whatever will have a dedicated device or something like that, you know?
That means, means you can play Wordle on it.
Probably can.
Which is like literally the most graphically advanced game that I play.
Yeah. And, you know, here's the thing that's also nice.
Sorry, no, Wordle, because that's got the picture of the country.
One thing that I think that's nice versus like other more traditional consoles is it just has a USB-C thing on it. So every headphone I have works. Like, I don't have to have a specific, like all of my power adapters work. It's not like a special plug or whatever. I could use a USB hub with Ethernet on it, you know, because I would install games faster. Plug it all in and it was all like magical and stuff. There was no, like, you know, when you go to Nintendo aisle in your store and they have all those accessories. Like, I don't need any of that stuff. I have all that crap already. So that's pretty dope.
Because they already have an ecosystem. Because they go, exactly. PC. We have this huge... Why would we invent new sockets for everything so we can sell you headphones?
Yeah.
Now, why is that useful?
That's the benefit of the PC world, isn't it? Is that you kind of have to fit in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It exists. It's not like Nintendo or PlayStation or Apple or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, Wicked. Well, thank you, George.
Cool.
For the review.
Yeah, if you're a nerd, get one. It's great.
Man, we've only got like 10 or 12 minutes left.
Yeah. We could talk about anything. I love it.
Yeah, it's always a good time.
Well, this is good. Did you see that iPhone's going to be USB-C?
It is?
Hallelujah.
Well, in theory, they're testing it, and this is good.
This is iPhone 14?
As far as I'm aware, it's not actually been announced that it's definitely happening in any particular model. They are testing future models. So Bloomberg say it won't happen until 2023 at the latest. So this year's new model. So the 14 will be this year. They're still going to be Lightning. And because iPads are already USB-C, Macs are already USB-C.
Yep.
It's weird because I bought the iPhone and I got a little cable, which is USB-C. Small USB-C on one end and Lightning on the other.
I've got one of those.
Right. And I'm like, what am I meant to do with this? I don't have any device. I have devices which are USB-C, like phones that charge off USB-C, for which I need a cable which is USB-C on one end and bog standard USB on the other. I have no device which outputs on power on USB-C. What you're supposed to do?
That's for people plugging it. That's for people plugging it into a Mac.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But they don't provide another cable. So how am I meant to charge the iPhone?
I did is we kind of did like a house inventory of all our chargers and stuff, and I just moved everything to USB-C at one point, and we just got rid of everything else.
It's the way forward.
Yeah,
even in my kitchen,
I replaced the power plugs to have USB-C plugs, so that we just have it. Then your only problem.
That's a bold move, going USB-C on the plugs.
That's right.
You're in at that point.
I went all in. The only issue, so this is really interesting, is you're like, finally, a single plug for everything, right? It could charge my Steam Deck. It could charge my laptop. I've got a Hyperjuice charger that will fast charge a phone, a tablet, and my laptop. And it's all using the same plug, and it's amazing. And then you realize that in the past, you could tell based on the plug on what the capacity of the thing is. But now, because they're all USB-C, you grab something from the drawer and you plug your phone in and it's slow charging and you don't know it because the plug fits. And it definitely won't charge your laptop. So I've seen people, relatives or whatever, have like their slow charger that just happens to have USB plug plugging into their tablet. And it's like, it's not going to charge that thing.
Yeah.
So now I have to care about wattage. Like,
this is all so
awful,
bloody confusing.
I know.
Yes.
I had something recently where I've got this little setup here where I record videos and work with clients. And without going into too much detail, I got a camera over there, which is plugged in through a Camlink 4K that Elgato puts out. And when I was running OBS with the other camera on, and then I've got like my microphones plugged in, with my laptop plugged into the wall, it was draining the battery on my laptop. Then I was actually doing a talk one time to a company and it hit 10% and then it started throttling the CPU and everything started going wrong. I didn't realize that you can plug things into a computer and they can drain more power.
Yeah.
So it actually starts using the battery.
Yeah.
So then I had to figure out, and I ended up getting like a Thunderbolt dock, with external power to that. And it finally broadly fixed. And it's like, how the hell
do we get here?
Hours figuring this stuff out.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
how
like somebody's
real people
mom or dad. Yeah.
This?
They can't figure that out.
Yeah.
Mind you, I mean, real people are probably not using OBS and multiple cameras plugged in.
The idea that you can have a cable which works for data but doesn't work for charging, or works for charging and doesn't work for data. I want to go and find, sure, there are some people who make knockoff cables, which are like that because they're knockoffs.
Yeah.
But that's also a supported configuration from the USB-C people. I want to go and find whoever came up with that idea and repeatedly punch them.
Yeah.
Like, why would you want a cable like that to exist? I don't care if manufacturers go, well, you have to certify because we're going to make them regardless. What you do is you say, if you do that, what we'll do is we'll just put your fingers in the paint box like in Dune or something.
Yeah, so like this this headset has a USB-C plug and my laptop has USB-C ports on it, right? So I'm suddenly going, oh man,
I don't have to
deal with Bluetooth. So I plug it in and I plug it in there. It charges the headphones, but I can't get music. I was like, are you freaking kidding me? So that's why I have to bring another cable, this analog one. And these are the manufacturers that are trying to get rid of this stupid thing in the first place. So it's like,
oh yeah,
man,
so
dude.
So there are two things I do not know that I worry about. So undercharging and overcharging. So the undercharging thing is, I completely agree with this. I've got a bunch of chargers where you think, okay, I'll just plug the cable in. So I've just got a charger with a USB hole on it, right? And then I've got a USB-C cable, plug it in, and then it won't charge anything because we've gone from you need 2 amps to fast charge to you need 1 amp or 2 amps to charge at all.
Yeah.
And a bunch of stuff. If you plug 500 milliamps in, you can't charge it off the socket on a computer anymore. Doesn't work. But the other thing is, like the MacBook charger, that's USB-C output.
Right.
But if you plug that into a phone, does the phone blow up or something? It puts out 100 million gigaamps or something.
All that part works. The problem is you can never tell the power output at the brick.
Right.
And you have to get a magnifying glass too. They make it all small. Like I'm starting to notice some of the more
super
enthusiast
frightened
ones
about using something like a laptop charger on something like an old phone, which happens to be USB-C. In case it goes, oh my God, too much power, and then it melts or something.
Yeah, I mean, that's what the transformer will regulate that, right?
Yeah. I've never had a bad experience with that. But I could see where that gives you anxiety because you're like,
Jono, hey, that's you going, Jono, that's you going, yeah, I'm sure they would have done that in a kind of, it's not my house that burns down, better just give it a try. I'm not
what
at all
What do they
sure.
say about assumptions again?
Yeah, yeah. Right, exactly. Makes an ass out of you and my house.
It's like like the first time I they had USB ports on an airplane, remember when they had USB ports?
Oh, yeah.
And you're like, oh, cool, finally, or whatever. And I had my USB headset, and I plugged it in thinking I would get audio from the stupid entertainment system to my headphones.
No.
Wait a minute. Why did we just go through all this?
Yeah.
You know?
It's it is confusing. And I discovered as well in setting all this stuff up that apparently certain USB-C cables will not transfer video.
Yep.
You can't plug them into webcams.
Yeah. It's like,
oh,
it's just
great.
Why would you do
that? Yeah.
And I think the cable industry wins out because I think for many people, I'm certainly guilty of this. You buy a cable for $8 or whatever.
Yeah.
It doesn't do what you want. And you're like, oh, whatever. I'll roll it up. I'll probably use it at some point in the future.
Now
I've got loads of USB-C cable.
I know. I got a box. You pull it out the entire a whole
hardcore policy on this. When you work out that a cable is no good, put a label on it which says not good cable or doesn't do speed or something.
I just toss it.
If you actually chuck it away, then I'm like, I don't do that because then I just wouldn't have enough cables.
Yeah. So what I did, I know this is so stupid, but do a nerd audit of all your cables, and then everything I cared about, I went and got nice braided cables and all that stuff.
You did a hang on. So the Castro household does a cable audit and has a charging.
I just got
review.
I got sick of it because I have
party
a
on.
Like I have a kid now, right? And my dad and we were taking the kid somewhere. And my dad's like, I was like, did you charge his tablet? Because he'll melt down if you don't have his tablet. He's like, oh yeah, I charged it, but he plugged it into some slow charger or whatever. And I was like, oh god.
Oh yeah.
And then you're I was screwed. Like, you know what? All slow chargers are gone forever.
Man, this is like, oh yeah, but obviously I wouldn't use the Linux thing because who does that? But I did put all my cables in alphabetical order.
You know, so. Hey, look, I'm just trying to make my way through life, you know?
I'm just holding on, man.
You know? I just wanted my kid to watch stupid Paw Patrol so he wouldn't like yell, you know? And then
Paw Patrol.
Yeah, the solution wasn't to make sure that I had given my dad the right charger. It was just to throw away all my charger.
That's such a good policy. I mean, this is right up there with, you know, one of these me going, like, what I'm going to do is I'm just going to buy all identical black socks and chuck all the rest.
See, I didn't intend to get all Linux on it. I just went all Linux on it by default, which is bad.
This point, man, it's in the DNA.
You're never going to shake that.
I'm just built right in, man. Right.
Yeah.
So we should say thank you very much to George for coming.
Thanks for listening to our rambling, folks. If you made it to the end, you get a prize.
Thank you to Marius of Nerdzoom Media for doing all the editing. Now, hopefully you will have seen him edit this already in Twitch, and hope maybe you're listening to this on Twitch right now. But we will try to post on Twitter or whatever, Johnny posting the Slack when it happens.
We'll let you know when he's going to do it.
We'll get the word out there. One last thing I'm just going to mention because I found it amusing. I don't know if anyone else does, but it's this website called Way Off. It's a little quiz, wayoff.net. And what it is it makes you, it tells you two things and asks you to compare their weights and say which one is heavier. So you think it'd be like, which is heavier, a bookcase or a dog or whatever. But it's all like, which is heavier, 600 trillion ants or the moon?
And it's just, look at this, 200 zillion human red blood cells or the Titanic.
It's just, I don't know why I find it so funny, but it's just hilarious.
That doesn't sound fun to me.
It's just
is this on the Steam Deck?
All these bizarre,
I think I could PWA that bad boy. Actually, if you make it a web app and publish it to FlatHub, it absolutely can go on my Steam Deck. Don't do that.
You've got a browser on it. Just go in the browser to it.
All right, I'll do that.
Yeah, but you've got to modify the internal clock speed to open the browser.
Come on.
You know.
That's below the belt now. That's below the
belt. You're going to enable ray tracing in the browser?
Yeah. So we will leave you, Bad Voltage listeners, answering the question, which is heavier, a gorilla or 4 million peanuts?
Ooh.
See? So which do you think it is? Gorilla or 4 million peanuts?
So what's a gorilla?
Yeah.
For 450 pounds, maybe? Oh, you have different units, though. You all use kilograms, yeah. Don't you?
It's
yeah, but it's only asking which of those two is heavier. It doesn't matter what rubles. You measure it in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to say 4 million peanuts, and I am correct.
Oh, is it? Oh, okay, that's good to know.
The unit of measurement in England is a blimey.
Yeah, a gorilla weighs 227 blimeys, and 4 million peanuts weighs 2,400 blimeys. That's good to know. That's okay.
Wicked. So, well, yes, thank you, George, for joining us. We always love you coming on the show. We love you, Opopi. But we're looking forward to having Jeremy back, and we'll see everybody on the next one.
Yeah, cool. Cheers.
See you then.